Welcome to COCO Conversations, in-depth discussions with color computer luminaries, past and present. For this episode, I sit down with Keith Alfonso, a prolific author of OS9 software for the color computer. Keith's company, Alpha Software Technologies, was a mainstay in the late 1980s and sold popular packages such as the Zapper, Multimenu, and OS9 Level 2 BBS, to name a few.
I know that you were involved, right, with the, were you involved with the New Orleans COCO SIG at some point early on?
I was involved with the New Orleans COCO SIG a little bit. But we also had one in Chalmette, which was actually where I live.
Okay.
So we had a small COCO SIG there. And sometimes we'd cross and do cross things together because, we were kind of small. So
some names that I remember from the New Orleans COCO SIG, this was in the late 80s. Andy Boudreau.
Mm-hmm. I'm terrible with names, by the way. So.
Yeah. Chris Mayhew was actually in Chalmette.
If you Chris remember. Mayhew. I remember Chris Mayhew well.
Yeah. Yeah, Chris was involved in the COCO SIG, and he did a series on the public television station there in the late 80s called Learn Your Color Computer.
Yeah.
How did you get started in the COCO? What's your history on that?
Well, for me, it really started, it's funny, when I was just in high school, probably 10th grade, 9th, 10th grade. And I used to just love to play with electronics and stuff, tinkering around with hardware stuff. And I don't know, I kept blowing things up. It kept costing a lot of money. So at the local Radio Shack there, they got their first Model 1 computer in. And I was playing with that in the store for a little while and started learning some BASIC on there and kind of got to know that machine. And then So then they came out with the color computer and had all the graphics and all the color and all that stuff. And so I was just super excited about it. So I ended up, my parents got me that for Christmas one year. And I just lived on the thing for forever. So they were worried that I was like not leaving my room because I was playing on my computer too much.
I gave my parents the same problem, right? It's like, son, you need to go outside and see some sunlight. It's pretty much what we're telling our kids and our grandkids today.
Exactly. That's what we're telling them now. Yeah.
We see the sense in it now, but back then we were going through the same damn thing. Was it a COCO 1 that you started with, Keith?
Yeah, I started with a COCO 1. The first thing I wrote was games. I just like writing games. And so I started writing in BASIC, and then eventually I grew BASIC. Wouldn't do what I needed it to do. So then I taught myself assembler language and started doing that.
What year was that about? Do you remember when you got your COCO 1?
I want to say 81, 81, 82.
Yeah. So you got the COCO 1. Did you move on to a COCO 16K? Yep. You weren't running OS9 on it, obviously.
Oh, no.
So
it was all cassette back then. Everything was cassette for me.
Everything was cassette, right? So did you download game or not download, excuse me, did you get games from the club or friends or whatever?
Yeah, we used to get together and would, of course, trade software and stuff like that. And then and then started getting into some of the BBSs and dialing into BBSs and things like that. That might have been a few years later when I got my, 1200 baud modem or whatever. I think I had a 300 first, but yeah, it was.
Yeah, we all started out with 300 if we're back in the day, right?
Yeah.
So COCO 2 comes out in 1983. Did you get one?
Yeah, I upgraded to the COCO 2 pretty soon and eventually to the COCO 3.
So the COCO 3 came out in 80, well, it was announced in 86, basically was out. And of course, was it for Christmas of 86. So the COCO 2 was 64K. I'm assuming you had a 64K COCO 2. Is that when you started running OS9?
I think I started running OS9 on the 2, but I really didn't get into it too much until the 3. Because the 3 is really where it kind of sang.
Right, with the Windows.
And that's when I was in college by then, so.
So what year did you go to college? Just so we can set this
up. I graduated 83.
Okay, so you're a high school graduate, 83.
Right.
So COCO, so by that point, you were 83, you were starting college, you had a COCO 2 because the COCO 3 didn't come up until 86.
But I must have done OS9 during that time because I wrote some of that first software that I sold pretty early on in college. So it had to be like 85, 86 when I wrote that stuff. So I was probably doing OS9 even on the COCO 2.
So you went to Radio Shack and bought a copy of OS9. You remember doing this, like get the manual, reading through it, probably just being captivated by it, right?
There's lovely gray manuals. Oh yeah.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, right? It's just the Bible that you carried in your book sack, right, along with your college books. So did you subscribe to Rainbow? Did you subscribe to magazines?
I subscribed to Rainbow for sure. Absolutely.
I'm assuming that you were inspired by the ads and the articles and the all that, right?
I actually wrote my first article was actually in Tandy's publication. I can't remember the name of it.
Really?
What was Tandy's publication?
Well, they had something early on called Microcomputer News.
Something like that. Yeah, I think that's what it was, Microcomputer News. And I had a little assembly language thing that I did that would basically just take your screen and just dump it off to memory, and then you could call it back. And so that, it was really useful if you're working in BASIC, where you could build a screen and flip it.
Really? I'm going to have to look for that. So this was something submitted to Radio Shack somehow, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So the Cocoa 3 came out in 86. Now, by that point, you're in college. I'm assuming you went to college for computer science.
Yes.
And the Cocoa was your
Southeastern Louisiana University to get my bachelor's, and I went to USM for my master's.
You said Southeast Louisiana?
Southeastern Louisiana.
Is that Hammond? Yep. Hammond, Louisiana. Familiar with it. Then you went to USM. I actually went to USM for a year as well in Hattiesburg. So you got your computer science bachelor's degree.
And
do you remember, I'm trying to think of some of the professors that were there at the time I was there. I was there in 90, 91 or 92. Ray Seifert. You remember Ray Seifert?
Yeah, I remember Ray.
Yeah, Ray was there. There was a lady. She wasn't a professor, but she was an instructor. And I can't remember her name. She taught Pascal. Anyway, I went through the same program. I was at least in the program there for a while. So you were in Hattiesburg. And is that where you started Alpha Software Technologies?
So that was when I was getting my master's. I think I started it when I was still getting my bachelor's degree. But right around that time. So I'd have to, but I can't quite remember exactly when I started it. But I know I wrote a lot of the software while I was getting my undergraduate degree, because I remember writing it.
Right. And by this point, the Cocoa 3 was out and OS 9 Level 2 was out.
Yeah. In fact, I think if I remember correctly, I wrote almost all the software before I was getting my master's. I don't think I wrote it much more after I got my master's.
As a side note, in the September of 1988, I attended in Ocean Springs, Mississippi, a color computer sort of mini fest where the Ocean Springs Color Computer Group was called the Singing River Color Computer Club, and the New Orleans Cocoa SIG came together at a library in Ocean Springs on a Saturday in a weekend in September of 1988. Were you there by chance? Do you remember that?
I do not remember that.
Okay. I attended that meeting. It was, like I said, it was sort of a mini fest. So it was around, that was in September of 88. By that point, the Cocoa 3 was out for a couple of years. Now, I'm looking.
I remember going to the Cocoa Fest in Atlanta.
Okay, so you did go to the Cocoa Fest in Atlanta. That would have been 1990.
Okay, I did go to the Cocoa Fest in Atlanta.
I think the first one was 1990.
Is that 1990?
Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure the first Atlanta Cocoa Fest was 1990. Now.
Yeah, that's right, because I was married at the time. That's right. Okay. Yeah.
There were Rainbow Fests, which were the sanctioned Rainbow Cocoa Fests. They were called Rainbow Fest in Chicago, New Jersey. But in Atlanta, it was a separate group that handled their own, like, Cocoa Fest or Atlanta Fest is what they call it.
Yeah.
So I want to touch on your products. One of the things about Alpha Software Technologies that I remember when I was using OS 9 in the late 80s, you had a plethora of products. I want to go over each of them with you.
Okay.
OS 9 Level 2 tools. Do you remember that?
Yeah. That was like my first one, I think. I had just written a whole bunch of little tools, so I just put them together in a box. And
yes. Wconfig, Fpalette, Bcolor, Border, Fpalette. I'm telling you all these things to kind of jog your memory.
I probably can't even remember all of these.
So, and of course, these were written in assembly language, as I recall, because they were quite small, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I wrote all my stuff in assembly language.
Another product that you wrote, which I remember was Presto Partner.
Presto Partner. Yeah, you're gonna have to remember what was Presto Partner.
So Presto Partner was it used MultiView. MultiView was the graphical user interface that ran on top of OS 9. Actually, part of MultiView was integrated into the operating system as modules at the kernel level. Right. But Presto Partner was, as I recall, it reminded me of the, it had like a pop-up, set of pop-up utilities that would be in Windows to do things.
Oh, yeah. Was that what it was called? Presto Partner? All right, Presto. I remember that. It had the little notepad, and there's a whole bunch of little things you could do with that, yeah.
Yes. So
I remember one of my favorite features of the notepad. You could type in an equation, you hit Alt equals, and it would do the calculation for you.
What was the terminal stay resident program in MS-DOS that everybody used back then?
Oh yeah, I think it was modeled after that.
Yes, and I failed to remember the name of it.
But, yeah, it was kind of modeled after that. Yeah.
Yeah. Another.
Funny story. So the little feature where it would calculate, you know, you type in a formula and it would calculate it. I had a class on parser writing.
Really? Yeah.
In that class, I had to write a parser to parse equations. So I took that code.
So that you took that knowledge and you built a product, then you made money.
It came from my class. Yeah.
That's an entrepreneur for you. Do you remember Data Windows?
Oh yeah, I remember Data Windows.
What can you tell me about that?
Yeah, so it's another one actually came from a class that I had. So where we learned how to do like bee trees.
Yes.
So I was like, oh, okay, I can write a good database with this.
That's right. There was some database functionality in that product.
Right.
Data merge, growth, data developer, data app, data forms.
Yeah.
By the way, I'm using a website called colorcomputerarchive.com that has a lot of scanned PDFs and disk images of software. And this is kind of where I'm getting my recollection here.
Not just all memory.
Yeah, that's fine. I'm going to jog your memory. ANSI graphic editor. Do you remember that one?
Oh, yeah, I remember that one. That was like a utility to support the BBS.
Yeah.
So you could put stuff on the screen and hit record, and it would record the screen in ANSI characters.
Uh-huh.
Or you could put an animate mode, and you could just type whatever you wanted, up, down, left, right, and make it move all over the screen and do all kinds of animations.
Disk manager tree.
Oh, yeah. I got that one. That was one, straight off of an MS-DOS. MS-DOS program that I saw. I was like, oh, that's cool. We got to have that on the list now. So I wrote it.
Multi-menu.
Yeah. That was in OS 9 using the graphics mode as well, right?
Yes, I think that was also a multi-view.
Build menus for yourself. Yeah.
Do you remember something called Quick Terminal version 1.0?
Quick Terminal. What about Quick Terminal? I remember Warp.
Warp 1 is another.
Yeah, Warp product. 1. So Warp 1 was interesting. I never actually wrote Warp 1.
Really?
So it was this guy I met. I'm not even sure how I met him. Might have been one of the SIGs or something.
Mike Randazzo.
Yeah. And so he was a welder, right?
Wow.
And so he wrote code for fun, but welding is what he did for his career. And he was evidently a really good welder, and it paid really well. It's like, man, you should really go into computers. He's like, no. I like welding. I'm like, all right. But yeah, he'd write updates for me. I'd go over there.
So this was a terminal program.
Yeah.
And he wrote this in assembly language?
Might have been in C.
I'm looking at the manual here. I'm amused by this in the license agreement. You have, this somewhat standard legalese verbiage, and you have this sentence that says, help keep the price of software down, and in all caps you have, don't pirate. Love it. And that was copyright 1988, Mike Randazzo and Keith Alfonso.
Yeah.
The Zapper.
Fix your stuff. Get it would grab whatever whatever you could do to save files.
Right.
Again, right out of Norton Utilities kind of playbook thing.
Yeah.
Inspired. But yeah, so had just all kind of different ways, right? I could, you know, just go in and you could find the file blocks and put them back together and all that stuff.
You were modifying things at the sector level. So you're opening up the device in raw mode and then, you know, manipulating the file system. You could probably do
always lots of fun to manipulate the file system.
you could certainly hurt things if you were not careful, right? If you were
definitely
cavalier on using that. Now, the next product that I'm going to talk about is actually, before I talk about that one, there's something called RAM disk. Did you have a RAM disk? I see.
I wrote a RAM disk, you know, where you can, you know, disk emulator in RAM.
Yeah.
It was so easy and fun to write device drivers in OS 9.
Mm-hmm.
It was so easy compared to like all these other operating systems. It's so freaking complicated. OS 9, yeah, you just had like an API essentially. And
you had basically, you know, your init, read, write, get, stat, sys, stat, turn, input points. And here are the registers that they set up. And here's what you do. Here are your data structures, your path descriptor, whatever. Exactly. Right. You had to understand what those data structures were. You had to understand the ABI interface, what the 6809 registers were at the entry point. You had to understand what the return values were, which is usually B is your error code and CC is either the carry flag set for error or the carry flag
clear for error. That was it.
Yeah.
So I wrote that. I actually wrote it. I don't know if I ever published it, but I did write one also for the speech. You remember the speech card?
Yeah, I didn't know that. So you wrote a driver for the speech sound?
I wrote a driver for the speech card where you could just, you know, echo whatever you want out
greater than slash
copy a file out to that speech card and it would just speech it.
Yeah.
Or use that as your output device on your terminal so you could type and then it would speak.
The cool thing about OS 9, right? Is that, you know, your standard input could be redirected from any device, and the output could be redirected, and your standard error could be output to any, you know, it was, and then your abstraction layer was the driver, which you as the user never saw when you wrote the application. You just open slash whatever, and it worked, right?
I loved OS 9. I loved OS 9. Still think it's an awesome operating system.
It is, and it's still in use today, believe it or not, so... Mm-hmm. So the last product that you wrote is one that I used quite a bit, and I thought was the pinnacle of your products line was OS 9.2 BBS. But what I loved about it is you took advantage of the modularity of OS 9, and you broke up different aspects of a BBS's operation into different modules and programs that you would run in fork to do different things at different times, which means that you didn't need the entire functionality of the BBS to be in the operating system's RAM at all time, right?
Right.
You could load things up, you know, if you needed to do sysop chat or whatever it was that you needed to do, search, upload, download, whatever the case was, right? Posting, all of these different things were actually literally OS 9 commands that you would do.
Yeah. And so, it was literally, I mean, yeah, like it was just a whole bunch of little utilities that you could put together and make into that.
Right.
And actually, if you go look at the code, like a lot of them are trivial. Like,
yeah,
literally copying input from a file out to the
again, letting the operating system do all of the heavy lifting. Yeah, right?
Exactly. So,
one of the things you had, and it mimics what came with OS 9, was there was a program called you wrote your own TSMon, which was time sharing monitor, and OS 9 had its own TSMon utility, right? Because when OS 9 was created, it was in the time of time sharing. Systems had different terminals, you know, physical terminals and different serial ports that you could use. There was a login program that TSMon would fork to handle the login, right? So TSMon would monitor the ports. Login would be launched by TSMon, would be forked by TSMon to get a username and password. And then you would have monitor, which was the carrier detect monitor. And then menu was the program that would actually put out the menus that you could design, I believe in text files it was, that you could put out.
Yeah, well, that's where that ASCII editor came in, because you could create animated menus by having the record mode, and you record up and down arrows, and you could type characters and go back and delete them and do all whatever you wanted, and then just play it back as an ASCII file.
What got you motivated to do OS 9.2 BBS? Were you...
I used to go on BBSs a lot.
Yeah.
And so, and then looking at how OS 9 was, it was like, this is perfect. This is, you know, all you need is a few utilities put together and use OS 9 to script it all together. And you could, you know, make a nice little BBS. And so
there
it was
good.
A lot of people had trouble with it because they weren't, you know, you had to know OS 9 kind of.
Right. Exactly. And
it was
that
not for the faint of heart. It required a little
grief. But therein lied the power of it, I think, because if you knew OS 9 or you appreciated how the operating system structured things, the BBS was almost intuitive in terms of how it presented itself to you. There were commands like bbs.who to find out who was currently online, right? bbs.page to page another user, you know, bbs.conf to enter conference mode. All these things were just broken out into modules that would run when they were needed. And if you were doing a multi-line BBS, you'd have multiple instances of the same process running.
Right.
The code itself would take up one location in memory. And of course, there'd be multiple data copies of the data area for each instance of the program so that you could have user one, user two, user three having their own instance of the command.
I remember I wrote a utility for that I don't know that it ever got published in the thing or not. But what it would do, actually, if you had multiple ports,
mm-hmm.
you could have it basically just connect the two ports together. So like anything that back. Came in one went out the other. And so then you could do that. And then what we used that for was chaining phone lines. Because you remember phone lines were like, you know, long distance was, you know, across a certain line.
Right.
We would do that. So then you could chain phone lines and get long distances.
That's cool. So that brings me to another product which I had of yours. It was a hardware product that you sold. I don't know if you designed it or you actually sold it from another design. Do you remember
the COM4? The COM4, yeah. So that was actually a guy I met in Hattiesburg.
Really?
I met him in Hattiesburg when I was getting my master's degree, and he was like, yeah, I know the COCO. Yeah, I made this port thing. I never did finish it. He said, you know, he's like, you know, I was going to sell him. I was like, well, I got this BBS thing. It's perfect for it. Let me sell him for you. So I ended up selling him for him.
Who was the guy?
I'm trying to remember the guy's name.
There was a guy that ran a multi-line BBS in Hattiesburg named Jim something, but I don't think he was a COCO guy. He was running MS-DOS-based BBS, but he had like a huge multi-line bank of calls. It wasn't this guy. Was it? What was that guy's name? Jim something. So I don't know of any other COCO guys that were in Hattiesburg at the time that I was attending USM.
Yeah, I can't remember his name. I wish I could remember.
But he had actually designed this. And
yeah, he had made this four-port card and for the COCO, and he was more of a hardware guy. I mean, you know,
yeah.
I think I met him in like an electronics class. And
really?
Yeah. And so he, you know, he was like, yeah, I got to do some updates for the COCO 3. I never did get around to it. So he did the updates to the board, and then we started selling it. So, but yeah, that was a great product because, yeah, you have four full, you know, at that time, 56-bit modems going all day long.
Well, if you think about it, all you had at that point for the offering for an RS-232 solution was the single RS-232 25 pin port on the RS-232 pack that Radio Shack sold. Right. Your card, as I recall, could fit in the multi-pack and you could fit four 25 pin
exactly
connectors to it and have up to four different modems or serial ports connected. In fact, I ran it. I think at the time I was using two physical terminals, two VT100 or maybe WISE terminals connected to it. And I would just basically fork shells off to T1, T2 or whatever. I think it was T1, T2, T3 and T4.
Right.
Were the device descriptors that you would connect to.
No. So
did you sell a lot of those?
I would sell a pretty good bit of them.
Because to me, that would have been a huge product.
Yeah.
And I remember it being advertised in the Rainbow magazine and thinking, mm-hmm. wow. And I forgot how I got it. I got it through some horse trading back in the day.
Yeah. That's funny. Selling that software, it never made a ton of money, but it was always just a passion for me, you know? It was always a lot of fun.
So you were in college. You were selling this while you were in college, right?
Right.
And so I'm just curious, you're selling software. You had ads in the Rainbow, by the way.
Yeah.
I remember mm-hmm. that. And that right. wasn't cheap either, right?
No, that would take most of my money.
So what would you do? Would you like get home from a class or whatever, or the college and get check your mail and you had all this stuff in the post office box or something?
Mm-hmm.
And you just fill in orders, cash checks.
Yep, filling orders, cashing checks.
Wow.
Stapling books, putting together Ziplocs. And
so one of the things, and this is actually captured in various PDFs on Color Computer Archive, is the documentation for your products, which I thought was well done. I don't know if you got kudos from customers about how well your documentation was written, but you go back in the day, it was hit or miss. You could buy Cocoa software that was either well documented or here's a cassette or here's a disc and good luck, right? Mm-hmm. And one of the things, and of course, the software you sold was, I don't want to say it was complicated, but it was advanced, right?
Right.
So things like OS 9 Level 2 BBS and Presto Partner and those applications that required you to sit down and kind of read something to understand how to use it. A lot of kudos to you because the documentation was and is still, I think, stands out in terms of quality documentation for the Cocoa and for OS 9.
I appreciate that. It's funny, my brother-in-law used to do the graphics. So those little characters.
Yeah.
Those are totally his. And so he's like, he's like, well, what do you want me to put together? So I remember one specifically for Warp 1. I said, look, you need like a guy that's like a disc that's just flying really fast. That's what you want. Yeah, the computer that's just running really fast with a phone. There he is.
So your brother-in-law did that.
My brother-in-law did that, yeah.
Wow. So we've taken a whirlwind tour of Alpha Software Technologies. The Cocoa 3 was canceled in 1990. And about that time, things like the MM1 were coming out. Did you ever get involved in any of those?
I didn't get involved in any of that, really. What year was that?
About 1990, 91.
91, yeah. So 91, 92 is when I was really graduating and started getting my first job. And so I started probably really fooling with the Mac at that point.
So you became a Mac guy after that?
Yeah, kind of a Mac guy after that. Yeah. Still got a Mac today, so.
Yeah.
But I do remember all of the Atari, when they came out with their color computer. What'd they call that one? I'm trying to remember it. But Atari had one for a little while.
You mean like
It had drop down menus and everything, just like a Mac.
Yeah, yeah, it had like a Gem OS or something.
Yeah, something like that.
Like that, yeah. Atari ST and all that. That was sort of the advanced 68K based Ataris.
Yeah, yeah.
So you got out of the Cocoa around what, 1989? I think that's the last year I see copyright notices on your software.
Yeah, that's about when I got out. Because, yeah, that's when I graduated and went into the working force.
Yeah, making real money.
Yeah.
You still have your color computers, Keith?
No, I don't. It died on me, and so my hard drive died, and so then I lost like everything. I had no backup, so oh. I literally have zero source code from anything I've ever wrote on the Cocoa, which is just
people are going to be crying to hear that.
It's just devastating. I got this guy to try and revive it, but he couldn't do anything. So then I was just kind of I was done.
You were dejected. Have you been keeping up with what people are doing on the Cocoa these days?
I've seen some of it. So lots of emulators and putting it on a Arduino or whatever. And
SD cards, which are placed hard drives. And
yeah, it's some pretty cool stuff.
Cocoa Conversations is copyright 2023 by Boise Pete. Exclusive licensing and distribution rights are granted to the Cocoa Group Podcast. No other permissions are granted or implied. All rights reserved.